This episode is sponsored by Alliance Tattoo Supply and the Brian Kelly Army Tattoo Flash. Thank you for joining me for another episode of Books Closed. I am Andrew Storitz, and today I am joined by the great Virginia Elwood. Thanks for coming in and being on the show. So let's talk about you, your feelings, your thoughts, your experiences.
Sounds vaguely threatening.
No, not at all. Let's talk about tattooing, because that's what the show is all about.
Cool.
When did you start tattooing?
Oh, man.
And I'll keep this part brief because this is like what everyone always asks in interviews. So
totally.
I just want to give a little bit of context for people listening that may not be familiar with your career trajectory, and then we'll go on to more interesting things.
I moved from New York City to Boston in like 1999.
So you grew up here?
I grew up in upstate New York in Rochester. Okay. And I moved down here in maybe 97, down to Brooklyn or down to Manhattan. And I don't really remember the exact year I started because, you know, it's like, do you count the first time you ever did a tattoo, or do you count the first time that you got paid to do a tattoo?
Yeah, but I never know.
Yeah.
I don't know when I started either.
Sometime around 9/11, or like right after maybe.
That's like a landmark in time that makes it easy to remember. So Rochester, New York. A place I've been many times.
I'm sorry.
Have you ever eaten a garbage plate?
Oh my God, I grew up on a garbage plate.
It made you the person you are today.
It really did. I'm like, half of my right leg is full of garbage plate.
Did you have formal art training growing up?
Not really. My mom was an editor for a vocation and an artist for fun. So she always had my brother and I into different kind of stuff and got exposed to a lot of, you know, just like different crafts and that kind of thing. But I hated school, like from kindergarten, preschool. Like all I remember is just hating it and being very, very anxious and like not being able to wait to grow up. So, you know, unfortunately, art kind of got swept up into that. And I do remember liking the art classes, but not taking maybe as much advantage of them as I could have.
Right. Yeah. I mean, hindsight's always 20/20. You never expect that you're going to grow up and be a professional artist.
No.
It's not feasible for most people. I think tattooing's pretty unique because it is one of the, not easier, but it seems like at this point, it seems like a more realistic way to be an artist and make a living. While there's a lot of competition, I feel like there's less than being a graphic designer. Yeah. I mean, I can only imagine being a graphic designer over the last few decades, how much that's changed. And there's got to be podcasts about that with people complaining about how it used to be and how it is now.
I remember when I was first sort of deciding like that I really wanted to learn to tattoo, and I was in Boston. And I didn't go to college, but I was taking continuing ed classes at Mass Art. And I just had like a, you know, a group of friends, and one of them was a graphic designer, and he had been for 10 years or so. And I mentioned, you know, maybe being a little interested in that. And he just, like, the eye roll was palpable, you know, and he just started lamenting the decline of graphic design and all the upstarts coming in and ruining it for the rest of them. I was like, okay, I don't like computers really anyways, so I will look elsewhere. But
yeah, could you see yourself sitting in front of a computer every day?
No. I mean, even just having a real job, I can't fathom, you know.
But sometimes I wonder, do we not give ourselves enough credit? Because I always feel the same way. I couldn't have a normal job or whatever, but I mean, tattooing is a very intense and consuming job, like a lot of jobs can be.
Yeah.
So sometimes I wonder, what would happen if I got a real job for like a week or a month or 3 months? What if you did it and you realized that you liked it better?
Oh, gosh. You're optimistic. My mind was going like my depression would just consume me, but
I mean, that's probably more likely for most people. I can't imagine enjoying something more structured and more demanding and less interesting to me.
Yeah.
It's definitely a luxury to do something that you're really passionate about, because even that can feel like a chore at times. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, my first few years of tattooing, like first several years of tattooing, felt like a chore. And I just was like, I don't know why I'm doing this. I'm so terrible at it. What is the point? Is this going to be like this forever? Is this real
life?
It's
like a deep hole you're not sure you can ever dig yourself out of.
Like having just that horrible anxiety every night before work, like the Sunday night before school lonelies, where your brain just gets weird. And you have that every day.
Yeah. But if you don't have that,
you're kind of screwed.
Yeah. I think you kind of need that. And even a strong minded, well-balanced individual, I think, should feel that crippling anxiety as you're starting to tattoo.
I agree.
I remember in my first couple of years, I would walk home and I'd walk over this little bridge and I'd always just peer over the edge and just dream about what could be. Mm-hmm. Maybe I don't need this in my life. So in terms of learning tattooing, did you have a traditional apprenticeship?
Yeah, I really did. I got very, very lucky, I will say. I had been, you know, exposed to tattoos and tattooing, you know, from like a pretty young age. I think I was maybe 15 or 16 when I got my first tattoo. I had skipped school with this guy that I don't even think I was friends with. He just was like the only other dude in school who wanted to get a tattoo. And this was in like 95 or 96. And we drove around Rochester trying to find a place that would tattoo us. And we finally found this biker shop. And I got a tribal pot leaf, you know, that I picked off the wall. And the guy had one arm. And for years, I thought I made the story up. And then several years ago through Facebook, the dude that I went to get the tattoo with contacted me and was like, remember when we got our first tattoos and you got the guy with the one arm? And I had like Jet from Love Hate up there and Ben White. They confirmed that there was in the 90s and 80s a one-armed biker tattooing. So I felt like, okay, I can trust my memories. but anyways, sorry, that was a weird aside. But
no, that's good.
So, you know, I kind of knew Jet. I looked up to him and idolized him. And Ben White was, you know, a little bit older than me. And he did a lot of my early tattoos. And I even had a friend, Liz, that was tattooing. But just I did not connect the dots. Even though I knew I wanted to make art. I was still pretty hung up on wanting to be a professional dancer. Like, that was really you know, where my heart was at, I would say. So when I moved to Boston, I met Rom, like, doing karaoke. We used to just go and hang out and do karaoke, and we made friends, and he was opening up the first legalized shop there. It had been, I think it had been made illegal either in the 40s or the 60s. I can't recall. And I just kept coming by and showing him my drawings, and, you know, which, like, I didn't have the burden of knowing that they were bad, which helped a lot, you know, because I think I had more confidence than I maybe deserved at the time. But I think I showed him that I was willing to work really hard, and I still don't think I was sure that that's what I wanted to do, but I knew that I wanted to try as hard as I could, you know?
Yeah. It's interesting that you say that you didn't know, maybe you didn't know enough to, like, you know, feel bad about your drawings or to worry about them or stress them the way that you might now. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I wonder, as the discussion of what should an apprenticeship look like, you know, do people need this traditional apprenticeship? Does that even exist? Because the more I talk to people about it, I'm not sure it really exists that much.
Yeah.
I mean, not many people that I've talked to for the show really had that experience where they would say that they had like a full, good, solid apprenticeship. And after a certain point, I mean, obviously it helps. It's good to have direction and it's good to not make a bunch of mistakes to learn lessons first, mm-hmm. especially if it has to do with safety and, you know, all that side of tattooing. But sometimes I wonder if this newer generation of tattooers right now that are coming up and not really worrying about finding this traditional apprenticeship and they're forging their own path and kind of taking different avenues, if they're able to express whatever they're trying to do more freely and in a much bigger way because they don't have any of those parameters that they feel they have to conform to a certain thing. And it's an interesting thought that if you look at it that way, it sounds like not having a traditional apprenticeship might even be better mm-hmm. at this point, because there is the information that you know, the baseline foundation, you can kind of get that elsewhere. If you look for it though, and that's what's tough. You need to be the right kind of person with the right motivation and the right persistence, but then also this disregard for tradition and all this stuff mm-hmm. And that's like a very particular kind of person that I'm not sure how many people fit that.
Yeah. I just think it's not one size fits all, you know, our industry has historically kind of been unregulated. You know, when we talk about traditional apprenticeships, I don't even know if most of us are describing the same thing, because they didn't really exist, you know, like way before my time, like there weren't really traditional apprenticships. I think that
it's
a fantasy of a traditional apprenticeship. And Fat Rom was taught by Fred Smith. And Fred Smith, I believe if I have my lineage correct, was taught by Mark Mahoney. So Rom, you know, is very proud of that lineage. And I think he gave me like the fantasy of what he thought an apprenticeship should look like. I'm obviously really, really grateful for it. I think we had, you know, it's just an interesting power dynamic. Like I was young, 2019 maybe, when I first started. And, you know, that was like almost 20 years ago. And now I can look back and be like, oh shit, I know why you did that or said that. And oh, I'm really glad you did. It's almost like a parent. I don't have like a very close relationship with my family. So for me, it's almost like, oh yeah, that's like what a parent and child relationship reflection looks like. Mm-hmm. Like I hated you at the time for this, but okay, I'm glad it went this way,
right,
you know?
Right. We all don't want to become our parents. And then we start saying mm-hmm. the things they say and doing the things that they did. Yeah, that's funny. But I agree. Cause there is no structure. There's no guidebook. There's no path that you do. There are a million ways to learn something. So there's mm-hmm. gotta be a million ways to teach it. And I think people are very resistant to change.
Yeah.
But it's funny to think that what are we even changing? It's just that people are admitting that they're not doing the thing that didn't exist instead of pretending they're doing the thing. I don't know. I didn't think that my mind would change about so many things in tattooing by doing this podcast. I thought I would just sit down with tattooers that I really admired and get to talk to them. And that would be cool for me. And then I can put it out and other people can hopefully get something out of it and enjoy it. But
yeah,
I feel like I've made a complete turn almost in the last 1 year because I think about all this stuff probably way more than the average person. But also just finding that all these people that I've held in such a high regard don't necessarily follow the thing that I thought everyone was about.
Yeah.
It's weird.
I love being surprised by people.
Yeah.
It's
been in a good way amazing. Every time for me so far. And it's really eye opening. But it's also a little scary because it's hard to come out and say, I don't believe in this anymore. Mm-hmm. Or what I thought was the thing. It's not my thing. Mm-hmm. And I don't even want to be part of certain parts of it.
Yeah.
But it's also exciting because I know that people listen to this stupid show that I make and they might see things differently as well. And I think that's important.
Yeah, I think it's great to give yourself the room to explore and learn. And, you know, that might mean change your mind.
So I wanted to talk about just the general way that mental health in tattooers is a very important issue. But I don't know if I've ever even read or seen people talk about it much in the specific context of tattooing. Mm-hmm. I was trying to look up some articles just about general artists and how it's connected to mental health. And I found a lot of articles that said there's a very direct relationship between the two, and that all artists deal with this, this, and this, and this is why. And then I read a bunch of other articles that said none of that's true. It's not necessarily like the artist brain is more prone to this or that or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, I think all psychology stuff is a little speculative, I guess, but
yeah,
I don't know. I'm just speculating myself. But let's talk about, in your experience with yourself or with other people around you, have you seen a lot of instances of tattooers dealing with either similar or very different mental health issues? And what does that look like?
Oh, yeah. I mean, really, I can only speak for my own experience, but, you know, I don't think I've ever worked in a shop where there hasn't been someone there that you're very aware of as having a difficult time, whatever that may look like for them. I mean, since what we do is so performative for ourselves, for our coworkers, for our clients, I think a lot of times, you know, if you're extremely high functioning, which I am, like having had lifelong treatment resistant depression and anxiety, mostly as a result of childhood traumas, being able to be high functioning like that is great. It's kept me moving forward and you know, thriving instead of just surviving. But it also...
Do you think it's like a distraction, or is it more something that just fulfills you so much that it can balance out?
What do you mean?
Day-to-day tattooing is... You're so focused on one thing for a long period of time, mm-hmm. that I know that if I'm feeling physically sick, even that if I'm working, then I don't even notice it. Or if I'm like really hungry or, you know, something very basic like that.
Yeah, if you have to
pee. Yeah, right. But if you're tattooing, you can almost ignore it. Mm-hmm. And then the second you're done, you're like, oh, my stomach feels like shit, or mm-hmm. I'm starving, or I have to go to the bathroom or whatever. And so do you think that there's an element of that where it's just the greatest distraction ever because it's like an all-consuming mental exercise at times?
Oh yeah. There's definitely parts of it that are like that, you know?
And then the other side is it just so fulfilling because it's something that you're passionate about and, you know, you're able to do great tattoos and mm-hmm. you're, you know, as you work and develop and stuff, it just can fulfill you enough to maybe balance out other aspects of your life that without that could be even amplified and make things more difficult day to day.
Yeah, potentially. That buffer has provided almost like an unsafe place to hide for several years and sort of let myself like stew and rot in the, you know, in like the mental health depression stuff until finally, you know, it started to manifest in ways that I just couldn't ignore any longer and I had to deal with. So now when I think about working and I think about mental health and my mental health specifically, I really can't use tattooing as a shield to not feel physical pain or psychic pain or emotional pain. I've had to train myself to do that. And it's hard. It's hard to be honest with yourself about, no one wants to feel weak or shitty or, you know, there's still, I think, a lot of shame involved, even with people who are very open about having mental illness or struggles with mental health.
I think the stigma has definitely dissipated a lot of late, but it doesn't change the fact that it is so difficult to identify it within yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can know, I don't feel great all the time.
Yeah.
But it's hard to make the jump to be like, this maybe is what it is, or maybe I should do this, or, you know, to really look at it head on. How can that even change? Because obviously talking about it and having people more open about it is a huge step forward, but mm-hmm. there's got to be more steps that I don't know what that would be to keep the progression.
I don't know. For me, just... I think kind of realizing that I like had all these issues maybe 10 years ago, I kind of knew that I did, but it was just like, oh, this is this whole other side of me. You don't have to see that. Don't worry. Look over here. Like all the fun tattoo stuff is happening over here, you know?
It's like you have that one closet where you just put all the junk in your house and you hide it in there, and it's just like, you can't open it because it'll all just come pouring out.
Yeah, exactly. So, for the past like almost a decade, I would say I've been working really hard with a therapist and with the support of my wife, Stephanie. I think she really was the first time I felt safe in a relationship, and counterintuitively that safety allowed me to let myself break down for the first time. So sorry, Steph, but also thank you. Because if you don't have foundation and you're used to being like the rigid structure for yourself, and then finally, you know, you find something solid to lean on, you just sort of collapse, you know? So I've been rebuilding. I've been building foundation, and my tattoos and making art have been a really big, big, big part of that healing. I do try to keep tattooing and tattooing clients separate from that because, I don't know. I just try to have really good boundaries with my clients. I don't want.
In terms of what?
Well, in terms of a lot of things. So like, I feel that, you know, the tattooing is a pretty energetic exchange, and it's, you know, we can let in as much as we want or as little as we want. And, you know, some of us have an easier time putting up that wall. Some of us have an easier time, like, being more porous with it. I never want a client to feel like I'm working through some heavy shit on their tattoo, you know, because that's going to stay with them. I'm okay if they're working out some heavy shit while I'm tattooing them, as long as like they're not crossing my boundaries, which I try to make pretty clear, you know?
Yeah. And do you mean as far as like the actual tattoo itself, or more just like the exchange?
I don't know if I can separate the two, to be honest, because I could do like the same design from Flash on like 10 different people, and I would feel different about it each time.
Yeah. And as I was looking at articles, I also found a lot about art therapy, and here's the top 10 benefits of art therapy for mental health issues. And I was almost, and as cheesy as those articles tend to be, I thought it was a different angle on it, but maybe not one that would pertain to us, because I think when you're making art as a profession, then it's not as lighthearted necessarily, and it might contribute to more of your anguish or more of your, you know, hardships. I don't know. It's weird to separate the two, because it's something that fulfills you so much can also, I mean, I guess this is true of many things. Something that fulfills you so much can also like destroy you at the same time, but that's kind of, it has to be that way.
Yeah.
Because without the consequence, then you don't feel the victories and you don't feel the pressure to push through the hard times and everything.
Yeah.
And so maybe, I guess it is a form of art therapy. It's just a little more violent. It's just tougher. And I don't know. I think that's what I like about tattooing so much, because it is so difficult in every way. There's nothing that's ever easy about it. And it feels, you know, it starts to feel a little easier at times, but then something else changes, or you try to do something else, and then you're right back into like sweating it out until it's done.
Yeah, the barometric pressure is off that day, so your machine is not running right. And When I first started seeing my therapist, and she would try to get me to like draw and do like different art therapy things. And I had been hospitalized before, and like they often will do like art therapy, and I would just be like, oh, I'm not going to do it. Like, fuck you. You know, like, I do this for a living. Like, I can see right through what you're doing, and you're not going to trick me. I'm not going to let you win. Like, it was like, whoa, why am I having such a violent reaction to this? I think it spoke to me way too clearly, and I was not comfortable with that. You know, it took me a lot of years to move from tattooist to artist, because I think everyone just has their own way of coming into tattooing, of course, but mine didn't mean, you know, being the art kid in high school and then going to college for art and then tattooing, I really learned about art through tattooing. And I think I had been tattooing for at least 10 years. It took me that long to realize that, like, oh, what I'm drawing or painting can show me and other people insight into how I'm feeling. Like, it's not a big leap to make, but for me, I was very naive. I thought tattooing was very protective and like an armor for me, you know?
I don't know if it's as naive as it's just the attitude of tattooing, like the art of tattooing. Yeah. It's not really about you.
True.
It's more just like replicating and reusing these images, and it's more like a visual thing, mm-hmm. almost solely, or it's like the symbolism is only for the person getting it and it's their choice. So we're just kind of like the messenger.
Yeah. I was very comfortable in that space and sure. still am. Like, I think it's crucial, but what was helpful to me was to learn more about art outside of tattooing and how it's provided me with some insight and some clarity over the years, you know, that softness that I've started to feel over the past few years. And, you know, I live in a rarefied world. Like, Saved is a really special shop. Steph and I have really lovely, lovely people working with us and as friends. So I think her and I often shield ourselves from like the greater tattoo community. And since her and I are both, you know, tend to be pretty optimistic people, I often think like, oh yeah, you know, open arms, like softness is coming in to tattooing a little bit more. It's so nice. And I don't actually know if that's the truth across the board, but for me at least, I feel like comfortable being a little more vulnerable and not like, all right, shut up, sit down, I'm going to tattoo this girl head on you, like whatever, you know?
Yeah, I feel like I'm seeing that a lot more are people carving out their little space in tattooing that can be whatever you want it to be. Can be whatever kind of environment, whatever kind of, you know, visually or, and just the energy of it. And, I think that's important because that's all we really can do.
Mm-hmm.
But I think leading by example with a shop like Saved, I think it can show a lot of people, because I'm sure there's a lot of other tattooers that come through and get tattooed pretty frequently. And just general customers who will see that that is possible and then seek other places like that, which mm-hmm. will increase the need for, you know, more like-minded people to treat their, you know, to treat tattooing that way. And I think that that's important. And whereas a lot of people can get down or think that we're all on this like crashing ship of like shittiness and everything's, all the magic's gone, and it's not, it can never be gone.
That makes me so sad to think, you know.
But that's just, I think someone who feels that way, and I know that I've felt that way mm-hmm. in the past, but when you really think about it, anything in the world can be whatever you make it, truly. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's some things that are out of our control, but for something like tattooing, it's like you can make it whatever the fuck you want it to be.
Mm-hmm.
You can make your shop how you want it to be. You can do the kind of tattoos you want. There's really so much freedom that I don't think people should feel pressured into being a certain way that they may not agree with.
Yeah. People feel threatened by change.
Yeah.
You know, especially when they maybe deep down subconsciously realize that that type of change could potentially benefit them, you know, or exclude them, you know, take up the space that they had been occupying for the most part, you know. Thinking the magic in tattooing is gone just makes me so sad, because I don't think it is. It makes me...
But maybe those people never had it anyway.
Yeah. And, you know, to be honest, I don't spend that much time thinking about like how other people view tattooing.
Right.
But, you know.
I only do because I'm trying to fill an hour every week on this podcast.
Yeah, fair enough.
And sometimes I think I find myself in these conversations and I'm like, does this even really matter? I don't know. Maybe it does. Maybe some people can benefit from hearing this stuff, but sometimes I question if any of it really is worth discussing after a certain point.
Well, I like the direction that you're moving. You know, I love hearing about artists that I'm fans of, and you know, I think that's really, really important and very inspiring. But, you know, I think that there's room to do better. I think there's room to talk about mental health. I think there's room to talk about trauma and boundaries and consent in tattooing. There's room to talk about maybe a little more intersectionality, a little more diversity. Those are the things that interest me more. You know?
Yeah. And that seems to be a growing interest in a lot of people, which I think is a great thing.
Mm-hmm.
And recently I was able to sit down with another tattooer, Gunnar, who is also interested in discussing a lot of issues about mental health and tattooing. And he poses a lot of questions on his Instagram and gets a shitload of comments. And it really sparks a lot of great conversation amongst tattooers and non-tattooers. So coming up after the break, I will throw it to a little segment where I sat down with Gunnar and we talked about his thoughts on mental health and tattooing. A huge thank you to Alliance Tattoo Supply for sponsoring this episode. Alliance is a distributor of the highest quality tattoo supplies. And how do we know that that's true? Because this is a tattooer-owned and operated company with over 20 years of experience in the industry. It's their mission to keep tattooing safe and in the hands of tattooers. Such a huge part of what we do is the equipment that we're using. So to have a dependable source like Alliance to get you the goods that you need, it's pretty invaluable. What's also valuable is the fact that they offer free shipping on orders over $199, and orders placed before 2 p.m. Eastern Time ship the same day. They carry brands like Lineage Needles, Team Victory Machines, and Line Fast Power Supplies. They've certainly got the goods, premium equipment for professional tattooers. And now, if you use the discount code BOOKSCLOSED, you can get 10% off and free shipping on your first order at AllianceTattooSupply.com. Don't forget, that's discount code BOOKSCLOSED. That's A-L-L-I-A-N-C-E TattooSupply.com. A huge thank you to the Brian Kelly Army Tattoo Flash for sponsoring this episode. Brian Kelly offers some very beautiful and timeless tattoo flash to outfit your shops, homes, apartments, wherever you'd like to hang some tattoo flash, really. He also offers single image prints, which may be more fit for the home. I don't know, whatever you're into. There's different strokes for different folks. But right here, I do have one of the many sets of flash in my hands. And it's printed on very nice, thick, textured paper. I always thought people cheaped out on flash set paper, but this is really, truly a nice option. We've got all the classics, roses, reapers, girl heads, pinups, the list goes on. You get it. This is solid, traditional flash, painted with a certain tenderness. And I don't know how else to describe it. You got to see it to believe it. So go on over to shop.briankellyarmy.com or on Instagram at Brian Kelly Army. And that's Brian spelled B-R-I-A-N. Kelly, K-E-L-L-Y, Army. Here I have a cool sticker from Brian, the Rose of No Man's Land. And if you would like to be the Rose of Discount Land yourself, then use coupon code BOOKSCLOSED for 25% off orders for a limited time. That's coupon code BOOKSCLOSED for 25% off your orders at shop.briankellyarmy.com. Go on over, pick up some tatty flash, and you'll be laughing all the way to the bank. I got to sit down with the tattoo artist Gunnar, who was at the time working in Boston. And what made me really excited to get him on the show was a series of Instagram posts I had seen him make. They were various conversation starters, and they certainly accomplished that goal, getting a lot of comments and getting a lot of people thinking and talking. Topics like, why are creatives so prone to anxiety and depression? Do I matter? Married to the job? Negative self-talk? The list goes on. It's all stuff that I thought was a perfect fit for this show because these are the types of topics that also interest me about tattooing. So Gunnar came up to the woods of Maine to sit down with me. We got to talk about those Instagram posts and more. What is it that made you want to start making those posts? Is it something inside of yourself that you're searching that and you wanted to get other output, or what motivates you to start those conversations?
Yeah, well, I think it comes down to like the moving back to Ohio. So I started this like journey, like self journey of self. You know, I think I hit that age where like some people buy cars and motorcycles, and other people go searching for who the fuck they are, you know?
Yeah.
And I had hit this like part of my career where like with the way tattooing was changing so much, like, you know, the need to be cool, sponsorship, like everything seemed fake about tattooing to me. The new world of tattooing was like, it was a, you know, a popularity contest and a fashion show. It was like nobody, you know, like it, to me, it was like people just weren't really caring as much about the process of the tattoo as much as like what designer artists they were wearing. Or so I was having like a lot of like internal conflicts with all that stuff. And also where I stood in it as an artist, you know, mm-hmm. Because I was buying into it too. Like, you know, I was doing all the things you are supposed to do to be big and keep your career going, and feeling more like unfulfilled than I've ever felt in my career as a tattoo artist. So, I'd been going through some other life shit, and I sold my business or closed it, and then sold everything I owned and just went on the road. Like, spent 3 months living in a Jeep and just touring around the country, like trying to figure my shit out.
What did you figure out?
Oh, probably more than we have time for. But
was it what you were looking for? Did it do the trick?
Yeah, because I had some relationship stuff where I'd like allowed myself to become like dependent on my relationship. I became like very like dependent on what I thought it meant to be a tattoo artist. This like identity of like being like a famous tattoo artist and what that meant to me. And like, so I was like so attached to these like things that to me, they're like, I went out searching for ego death. Like, who cares? Like, what if I'm not fucking a big name tattoo artist tomorrow? What would my life look like then? You know?
Yeah.
So that's what I wanted to see. Like, can I survive without being in a relationship and, you know, doing that thing? And so I spent like 3 months by myself, just by myself, like for the most part. And what happens when you come back and there's no career, you know, like when you walk away, like I walked away from tattooing for that time. And I was heading out to California to take a job out there and had gotten out to the place. And it was kind of like that. I got out there and I'd lived in California. Like I had a good clientele at one time and got out there and there was nobody waiting to get tattooed. Like, so the ego death I went searching for like occurred, like all of a sudden I'm like, nobody gives a fuck that I tattoo. Like there's a million good fucking tattoo artists now, you know? So that was like super humbling. And at the same time, I realized a little bit about myself and how like some of the aspects of tattooing that I was like, man, I really never want to be attached to this like dog and pony show ever. Like I don't enjoy that at all. What I did find out about myself is I'm really good at like guiding young tattooers. Like I'm good at talking and teaching about like tattooing, and I have a passion for tattooing. It's just different than other people's passions. Like I have a different like idea of the purity of tattooing. I still like respect the people that built this arena for us. And so when I was out in California, a couple of the guys I worked with kept trying to like get me to like teach, you know, like you should get people in and do these seminars and stuff. And I had been doing seminars now for, you know, 15 years or something. And I was like, yeah, yeah. But I was like in this weird like confident state of like, who the fuck wants to listen to what I have to say anyways? So I got to the point where I was at the shop long enough that I kind of exhausted my resources. If you're out of work that long, you can only go so far, like long living on empty.
Right.
And I still have responsibilities. Like, you know, I have two daughters that I still need to make sure they're taken care of. So I'm like, man, I really got to get my shit together. And so I left. Like I'm not going to stay in California. This isn't for me anymore. So I hit the road, didn't know where I was going to go. Like didn't have like an end sight. I was like, well, life is like, I really got used to like just living off instinct. Like if it's meant to happen, it'll come up and I'll go do that. So I did that and got offered this position out in Boston to come work out there. Like they had the new place. They were like kind of expanding and had some free booth space. And we're like, if you want, come on out. And I'm like, hell, why not? Like, I'll go give it a shot. And I like the idea of working the street shop because I wanted to like be no, like just disappear, like be like a nobody. Like So I thought, because when you're like there and doing like those fucking, you know, like these tiny, like I suck at, like, I realize I'm not good at doing Roman numeral tattoos. Like, I'm just not I'm not good at it. Like, my heart's not there. Like, I like large scale pieces, and doing all these tiny things just didn't bring me joy.
Did you find that, I mean, how long has it been since you really tattooed in an environment like that, to clients like that?
You know what? I try and do it throughout my career. I've actually inserted myself into street shops as often as I can, because you get to the point where, like, when you're working with collectors or whatever, let's say, they kind of know the process, you know? And it's like you become so used to your job. You wake up and you just take for granted what you're doing and stuff. And that's very easy to do. And so I would get to... It was a good way to go back to, like, having to walk a client through their first tattoo, and you're in the, like, okay, so you might get lightheaded, and you might, you know, like, and having to do that spiel again, you know, over and over. And it was a good reminder of, like, I've been doing this for this long, but this is their first time. Like, this is their first experience. And, like, we don't remember that very often, like, how uncomfortable or frightening that can be. We get jaded in the fact that we've been doing this so long. So for me, it's good to have those reminders of, like, man, this is the first time for this person, and they don't have been part of this for this long. And, you know, like,
right. So I had made note of a few of your Instagram posts that I mentioned before. And I wanted to start off with the one that was entitled, "Is It Real?" And that was in reference, I guess you posed the question, to what extent is, and now this is posed to, like, artists and tattooers, to what extent is depression or anxiety real versus self-induced? And for everyone listening, I want to give a disclaimer, because when you talk about mental health issues, I don't want anyone to get bummed. So no part of this discussion is, like, trying to diminish or debunk anyone's issues.
No. As a matter of fact, I live with...
Right, yeah. Yeah.
So I would never try and...
So right off the bat, we both agree that depression, anxiety, this stuff is very real, and it's always case by case, and it can be rooted in internal or external factors or whatever. So let's get that out of the way first. And a lot of this stuff is directed, and for this show, what I was interested in is in the context of the life of an artist or a tattooer more specifically, and how these things can affect our work, and how that can spill out into, you know, our relationships and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think? To what extent is depression or anxiety real versus self-induced?
Well, I mean, the hardest part is when I'm writing this stuff, I'm writing it like, and I want to come back quickly to the question you had asked that I got so diverted from. What made me write it? When I started writing these, I heard everybody bitching about apprentices, like, or young tattooers. And I was like, man, everybody's bitching about them, but nobody's talking to them. So the initial post that, like, I have earliest on were actually, like, things they should have told you in your apprenticeship. And it was, like, educational, like, facets nobody told you. Like, job isn't always roses, you know, like, stuff like that. When I started moving more into this part, what I found was the stuff that why they followed me or listened. Like, I don't really post art as much anymore. Most of the stuff I post are my thoughts. And it's stuff that I dealt with during my career. So when I'm saying this stuff, I'm never like, I'm not an analyst, like, I'm not a therapist, and I'm not, like, trained to clinically diagnose anybody or any of that stuff. I'm merely talking about my own experiences. And I've experienced depression on, debilitating depression. I had been... you know, had seen therapist, I'd been on medication at one point, and I was going through what I call stress-induced depression. Like, life had hit, like, I was going through divorce and children custody battles and affairs and all, and two heavy workloads. And nobody teaches coping skills. That's the one, like, nowadays you hear all these people talk about, like, these kids are entitled and everybody gets a trophy. And the reason why the trophy thing sucks is because nobody's teaching kids how to cope with failure. So you hear social media gets blamed all the time for, like, crushing people's souls. You know, oh my God, I compare myself with this art. Well, nobody taught them to ever compare or be compared in a critical way to realize maybe you do suck at that thing. And that's okay.
Right. It's okay to suck.
It's okay to suck at that. Yeah. So they're not being taught coping skills as children. The parents want to coddle them, and they, you know, and then they go to school, and now schools are coddling them, and nobody wants their feelings hurt. We live in like the time where it's like offensive to hurt someone's feelings and just be like, hey, I'm not trying to be mean. This just might not be the best course in life for you. Like, as an outsider, I know your heart's in it, but you haven't like made a straight line in a month, and you know, like you aren't a good artist, and this is a very competitive field. And it's okay to not be a tattoo artist. Maybe you're not meant to be. Maybe you're meant to be a chef or a doctor or something. Like, you don't have to take the career you're like we were talking about earlier. I would love to just meander across country. Like, if that was a job, like just meandering across country, I'm awesome at it. Like, I'm really good at it. Like, I'm really good at getting in my car and just driving around. Like, it brings me joy. But it doesn't mean that should be my job. Like, it just doesn't. Like, right.
We all can't achieve our dreams necessarily.
Necessarily, and that's okay. And the problem is that people believe like, but I really love art. Okay.
Who doesn't?
Yeah. Like, every kid with a set box of crayons loves art. Like, I love skateboarding as a kid. Being a professional skateboarder was not in my like life plan. It's what I thought I was going to do all the way up till I was 18. Mm-hmm. Just didn't work out that way. I would have liked to have been in a band, you know, like it's like.
Well, yeah, yeah. Because I think a lot of people don't realize that you can love art or music or anything expressive. Yeah. But when it's your job, it for most people, it's not going to feel like anything resembling what they think they love.
What they think they love. Yeah. And there's a part of me that like sometimes I don't regret it. But there's a part of me that like I miss being a kid who drew for fun. And not being a guy who drew for a paycheck, mm-hmm. because there's new responsibilities that come along with that. And that stresses people out. And so then they struggle with that. So when I had brought up the, is it real? I had some backlash to that. And some of it was like, maybe you're not on the life path you're supposed to be. And that's why you're unhappy. You're unfulfilled is because you're stressed because you can't keep up in a field you were never meant to keep up with in the first place. And so your stress is caused by you, by not trying new things and expanding your world. Like when tattoo, like I walked away, like I was stressed. I knew I was not going to produce my best work. I knew like, and then as soon as I got away, I wasn't depressed. I wasn't stressed anymore. I was all of a sudden like, oh, I can breathe again. I still had the responsibilities, but my kids are old enough that they are okay. I got an amazing ex-wife that is like, make sure they're, you know, taken care of. And so they kind of saw what I was going through and where I was at mentally, and they allowed me to do it. Like mm-hmm. it was a very talked about, like, this is what's going to happen. And they were encouraging of like, because what's the alternative if you're like in a bad mental place? Like, it can get rough for some of these people out there. And I don't think sometimes people like drowning myself in whiskey and you know, or whatever, like that was no solution for anybody. How's my family going to win in that in the long run? Or continuing to pushing myself till I get to the point that like suicide becomes optional or whatever, you know, like that's not healthy for anybody. So sometimes maybe, you know, you hear like suicide's a, you know, coward's way out. Well, maybe going on vacation for like the 3 months was my coward's way out. Like, I'm going to step away and I'm going to clear my fucking head and I'm going to come back sorted. And like, now I feel like a million, but like I could conquer the world. But I needed that break. I needed that like mental vacation.
Do you think it really let you face your problems head on? Or was it more that you were just realizing that your problems weren't as pressing or as crazy?
For me, I did like, so on my journey, I did a lot of introspective work. I needed to be alone during it and to like start to dissect the like, why am I, you know, like, how did I get to this? And so it was a very like personal journey for that. And it's interesting because if we come back to the like parts of like the, is it real? I was getting to a point recently with the job that I had where I was like, I was having anxiety attacks. Like I was having like straight anxiety attacks coming to work. And I was like, I'm not sad. Like I'm not miserable. Like, why am I having anxiety attacks? Like I make pictures for a living. And I work with a guy who's like this guy who's pretty good with him, and I get to talk back and forth, and he's a good guy to share ideas with. And he was, I came in one day and I was like, man, I can't keep doing this. I think I'm just going to take the day off. I'm going to go home and take a nap or something. Like I can't be here today. And he was like, go, like, he was like, I know you love to hike and you love to, you know, write. And he was like, but go to a movie or go take yourself on a date, you know, like go do something that's out of the ordinary from your daily life, you know? And so I went and saw like Spider-Man, you know, whatever. And I don't ever go to the movie theaters anymore, you know? I don't really entertain myself those ways too much. So I was went there and I, you know, splurged and got the popcorn, you know, like did the whole, you know, like I was a kid in the theater again. And it was like super refreshing. And then that night, like I sat and meditated on it and was like, what was going on? Like, where was that? And I had realized like the anxiety has been coming from this frustration of no growth as a tattoo artist. So I was really like frustrated. I wasn't depressed and I wasn't like, I was having anxiety because I had put myself into a position where I was doing work that was unfulfilling for far too long. And that was like, kind of like this foot on my chest of like, you're holding yourself back. Like, you know what you're capable of and you're not living within that capability. And so that was like, oh, it's frustration. Like that's what that was frustration. That was the root of that anxiety, was really just frustration with the fact that I'm not taking the next step in my life that I need to take. And it was my brain telling me like, you're not living where you should be living right now. And once I got to that, I was like, oh, okay, easy. So I talked to the boss and I was like, hey, I think I need to wrap up my time here. I need to go work in a studio I'm going to feel fulfilled in, that I'm going to be able to take projects in that are going to make me feel fulfilled, because I know that I'm more capable than the work here is allowing. And then I made that move. And as soon as I did, it was like, just people who knew me were like, you look lighter. And I'm like, oh, I feel like 110% lighter. Like, mm-hmm. Because I made the right choice for how my life needed to be. Like I was making those adjustments. And you'll see like a lot of people will continue to live in misery. They live in like, they're in these relationships and they hate the person they're with and they sleep in separate bedrooms. And you're like, why are you doing, like, get the hell out. Like, why would you do that? Like, you're miserable. You're making them miserable. Everybody around you is miserable because we have to hear how miserable you are. Like, take the step to change that misery. Yeah. And I don't think it's like, it's not maybe courageous. It's just people, like, they're so afraid to try new things, but they're willing to suffer in the old things that like aren't working. And that to me is like, I learned about myself. Like, I will not sit in that madness of like that misery. Like, life is far too short. And I hear these people that are like, man, you just gotta toughen it out. Fuck that. Like, because what am I going to do, 30 years of being miserable? Like, that's mad. Like, that's how you want to spend your time on earth? Like, I just did what I needed to do to survive. Like, no, I did what I did because I wanted to be happy. Like, I do want to be happy. Like, that's something I want to share with my children. That's something worth, not like I sat here every day and life sucked, but I, you know, gave you a chance at life. Yeah, Dad, and you were miserable the whole time and you took it out on us because you were fucking miserable. Bravo. Like, thanks. Yeah. Thanks for suffering for us, you know? Like, you took on that suffering and then you put it on other people. Like,
right.
And I watched that stuff happen all the time.
Yeah.
And so that part, I became a little bit like more in tune with myself. Like, I just don't. And I don't think, you know, that people like, is it hippie-ish? Well, maybe I think they want to be happy. Some other people love sitting in the suffering. Like, they enjoy that. I don't want to do that anymore. Like, I don't think that's
right. And I think
that's not my journey.
Yeah. And like, when you put it that way and you explain it that way, it makes perfect sense. I don't know how anyone could feel differently. Yeah. But it also, to me, it seems like having that frame of mind, you know, the journey that you took to get there, it takes a lot of like self-awareness that a lot of people lack, and that's where it can be hard, because you have to believe that to like be able to make those steps. You know, like you truly have to believe that that's the path that you want to take to say, I'm going to leave this job and I'm going to start somewhere else again.
Yeah.
And I know that it's, you know, when you explain it that way, it seems so simple. It's if you're in a toxic relationship, just get out. But when you're in it, there's, you know, there's so many factors keeping you in. And it's hard for people to do it unless they really achieve what it sounds like you've achieved as far as like what you want for yourself in your life.
Well, I think we make a lot of excuses
totally.
Of why we need to do this. Like, well,
it's never so simple. There's, you know, there can be kids and, you know,
and being the product of divorce, man, I was excited when my parents got divorced because the other alternative sucked. Like, what are you going to stay with them for 18 years and watch them fight every day? Like, that's terrible. But I feel like we can, like in myself, like I'm happy-ish, you know, like I'm not like one of these, like I see people that are like always smiling and always happy. Like some, if I'm smiling a lot of times, I might be part of like me just forcing like, you know, it doesn't come natural, let's say.
Yeah.
But I'd rather work towards that, being able to be like that, like a, and maybe one day I like, you know, like, what's that saying? Like, if you pretend long enough, it, you know, you might just become it. Like, and I had found these things where I was like, oh man, I really like, I talked about that today, like in one of the write-ups I did about being like how we're kind of married. I made a comparison to being married to our jobs. And you get to these points where you become like a little bit cynical in the job. And, you know, you had talked with Sean and a couple other guys, a barber, about complaining. Tattoo artists, why do they complain? Which I thought was ironic because it was followed up by a segment on Yelp reviews. And then I'm like, well, do tattoo artists really complain more than other people? Or are we just around more tattoo artists? Like, I think everybody complains about whatever their thing is. And I think it's healthy to complain. Like some people, like I had someone yesterday who kind of like was like, if you don't like it, get the fuck out, you know, type of thing mentality with tattooing. And I disagreed a little because I was like, hey man, you can bitch about it and still love it. Like it's good to let that, it's like if you, it's, I call it crimp hoe syndrome. When people like, they crimp a hose like a, you know, and they let stuff build up and build up and build up and build up. And by the time they let it out, all the frustrations in their relationships and the frustrations at work and the frustrations that, you know, in life in general. And then they let it out and it comes out like a torrent, like a hose that's just, you know, been let go, and or like a balloon, you know, that's like whipping around the room and it's just taken out on everybody around them. And it's not, they never meant to hurt everybody around them or to like vocally like destroy people or whatever, verbally like lash out. They'd let everything build up so long that by the time they like expounded it or like released it, it just was on everybody. It's okay to be like, fuck man, my client sucked today, or you know, if I have to do one more of these finger tattoos, like Who's it hurting? And for the people that complain about like other tattoo artists that complain about tattoo artists complain, guess what? You're complaining.
It's true.
Like you're doing it right now. Like, yeah. Oh, fucking everybody complains about tattooing, but you're complaining about the fucking you're complaining to. So allow, like I said, just walk out the room, like let them have it and then go on with your day. It's just okay. And, you know, like, I think that's why the tattoo memes are so popular right now. It's a form of expression to complain. That's what they are. I don't like the fact that we complain about our clients and so much in front of them all the time.
Yeah,
like
I think that's
bad business, you know, like posting that shit on your profile page. Yeah. That, like if you want to joke about it, like,
yeah, I love the memes, but that's always been my stance, that I wish it wasn't so public because I think it turns off clients. I've had people that are like, oh, I didn't know if I should write you, like I saw this other page and like I don't want to be annoying. And it's like, it's cool that they're thinking of like how they do it, but like they don't have to walk on eggshells.
Yeah. But I think that that's what that's become. That's the form of like, that's why they get shared and go viral, is because,
well,
because
memes are relatable. Like, that's like the name of the game.
Yeah. And so these people are like, man, they've got the same bitch and complaint that I've got. And like, and so I think it's natural. Like, I'm not opposed to it. Sometimes it's like, yeah, we do have an awesome job, but we don't, it's not always easy. And I'll hear like people like sometimes that are like, you know, it's because you didn't have another job before this. Well, no, I was also college educated and would have left school making six figures and chose this path. So I didn't have like my other job would have never been like burying bodies in a graveyard. Like that was not my other job option. I chose this field like it, you know, and willingly. And I don't think that that's like a, yeah, there's a lot of fucking shitty jobs out there. And some of those people that do those jobs actually love what they do and are probably upset that you're comparing your job to what they you think is their shitty job.
Right. Like, yeah, some ditch diggers out there like, what the fuck? Why are you saying
yeah,
that
why
again?
Why is it always us, man? I love this. This is the best. I get exercise. I'm out in the sun. Like, this is a great job. Like, I don't know why everybody thinks this job's fuck it. I hope they never show up. Like,
right, yeah, they're stoked. And yeah. I smoke cigarettes all day.
Dude, this is the I've been drunk since I started this job. Like, you know, or whatever. Like, might be the best job ever. I don't know. I've never, like, I've dug some ditch. It's not so bad. Like, you get in shape, man. I don't know.
Well, I think all that whole outlook is part of like the antiquated, like the stereotype of how we're supposed to be as tattooers. And a lot of that falls into, I think, with like complacency of people falling into that. And I've been thinking about it more lately. And I almost feel like I wouldn't have even been comfortable talking about it like publicly like this a couple years ago even. Because I was so like infected by that, like this is the way tattooers are. This is the way you're supposed to feel. You have to do it this way. Otherwise, you don't respect it. You don't love it. You're treating it poorly and you're like not carrying the torch properly.
Oh, yeah.
And the more I really break down that stuff, it's just weird because sure, I love and respect tattooing, mm-hmm. just like you love and respect tattooing. But to be able to admit that no one person is the same as any other. And we all have our own lives and we all have our own circumstances. And we mm-hmm. all come from different places. And especially with tattooing, there's no standardized way in. So, you know, we're just the makeup of all of our experiences in tattooing as well. So that makes us even more different, which I think is also why it's interesting to have conversations like this and to be able to share with each other and everything. But it's like you can't expect everyone to fall into this category, especially one that was born like decades ago, where no other place in our life are we following the same like social standards or rules as the 1970s or 80s or even 90s.
Or 2,000 years ago, or when that, what's that Iceman's name, Otzi, the prehistoric person with the tattoo. Like we're comparing ourselves to some illusion of what tattooing was really from the 60s maybe ish up through the 80s, not like the long history of tattooing, like in which case maybe it was more like medicinal use originally, or maybe it was a coming of age thing, like maybe it wasn't about anchors and, you know, like Sailor Jerry Flash, maybe it was about getting a dot on your kneecap or whatever. I don't know like what that character has, but we're comparing it to a false narrative right out the gate anyways to justify like our own narrative. Like this is the part of tattooing I'm attached to and attracted to. So that's all that tattooing ever was. Well, no, it's far grander than that. I mean, there was a time when people in the Victorian era were getting tattooed because like wealthy people were getting tattooed. Like that's a part of our history. Like, there was a time when the Japanese started doing the block print tattoo, creating the art form and telling these stories. That's a different part of our history. There's a time on island somewhere where they were tapping a tattoo into someone's face and they weren't loyal to the coil.
Well, that's like, why they're fucking posers.
But, you know, like, and I'm not trying to like put that down. It just is because I'm friends with these people. They're all my, you know, like I've been around enough to, I've learned on coils and I admire what's happening with the equipment. I'm glad that there's technological advances and we shouldn't be opposed to the fact that things are changing around us. But when you put your own narrative into the fact, like I'm going to isolate others because my way is the right way and everybody else is an idiot. Well, you're just as egotistical as the other person that you're mad about. You just have a different, like you took it out a different way. Mm-hmm. these are the things I've like think about with tattoo. Like, so when I write, this is all the dumb shit that goes on in my head. Yeah. And I think about this a lot because I'm like, where do I stand on this? Like when the like coil rotary thing came up, where do I stand on this? Like, I like the technology. I don't think that coils line as good as rotaries. I think rotaries got something going there, or coils have something going when it comes to lining. I can normally tell, like if I look at a piece, but
I think that's what I like about how you write, because I feel like your thought process is the closest I've seen in like a public forum that I can relate to. And even if I, you know, stuff you come out with, whether I agree with it or not, the way that you consider it and the way you talk about it, I feel like is something that I try to do within myself too, which to me, it seems like a more constructive way to look at anything.
Well, there's got to be something to being open-minded to the whole thing about it, especially because like, I don't expect when I write, I don't expect anybody to really give a fuck about what I'm saying or agree with me. Most of the times I don't agree with myself. I'll write stuff and change my opinion in the writing.
Right.
Like,
but that's what's great about it, because you're not just trying to convince someone and you're not trying to just be right all the time. Like, you're actually putting thoughtful, you know, thoughtful ideas into the public.
Yeah, it's trying to like, I try to pose questions of stuff that I'm curious about, like, where is tattooing going? Like, and in a realistic way, like, we can't lock down to a history that's already changed. You know, like, the reality is technology is changing.
And we're back with Virginia Elwood. So that conversation that I had with Gunnar was actually earlier this year. I think it was probably in February or March. And now we're in October. Holy smokes. October already. Man, I took a long break from this podcast. Anyway, 4 days ago, so we're talking right at the beginning of October, Gunnar had posted on his Instagram, a question for you, is it me or is it Instagram? And the caption says, so I've reached a point that I must reach out to the audience for answers, because as an artist, my career and income rely solely on people purchasing the work I create. If I am not creating work that is worth purchasing, well, I end up eating ramen and going homeless. And so an audience is truly important. I've done the best over the years to make sure I accommodate my clients and often go above and beyond what I see happen around me, to be kind, to be helpful to my community. And yet over the years, the decline in patrons has been systematically destroying me emotionally and financially. But I don't believe in pity parties, so I persevere. But I'm reaching a point that I'm not sure how much longer the starving artist act can go on for before can, sorry, I wish I could read, can go on before I must call it quits and move on. So I'm giving this an attempt. As an audience, I'm asking for your honest feedback. One, am I creating art that is no longer relevant to the current time period? Two, am I out of touch with the art in tattooing? Three, is there imagery you would prefer to see? And four, what are your thoughts? With over 50,000 followers, yet an average image getting 200 likes and 1 to 2 comments, I'm not sure if it's algorithm or me, but it is affecting my business. If you don't comprehend the pure humiliation it took to create this post, you have no idea where I'm at mentally and how much I love the act of creating. If I didn't, I would have given up, but the light inside is getting dim. And I thought that was a pretty heavy post.
Yeah, I think a lot of people have those same thoughts and questions. What were some of the responses?
Let's see. It has 400 comments. A lot of people commenting more about just how to play the internet game better, which is relevant to this question.
Mm-hmm.
Someone wrote, this is the first post from you I've seen for a while. And I thought the same thing. And again, that's just about the algorithm and stuff, which is crazy that we're so at the mercy of that. And it really does tie into our happiness almost, and I hate to admit that, but it's true, because there's so much more riding on it when a huge arm of your business is based on your visibility online as a tattooer, trying to keep up. And so what do you think about a post like that when you see someone who's talented, has been tattooing for a long time? I mean, it sounds like Gunnar feels like he kind of peaked a while ago, and he's trying to stay relevant. It's a scary thought, but I think that it's something that a lot of long-term tattooers must go through.
Absolutely. And probably with like increasing frequency because the turnover is so, so fast, you know, people posting 3 things a day, 4 things a day, and then 20 stories. It gives me like feelings to hear his post, you know. I know a lot of tattooers that have been working for a long time that have similar things happening. I have similar concerns. Like, I'm always like, okay, what's next? What if this falls off? Like, I've been so lucky and so privileged to like have the great clients that I do and, you know, be able to work with these people. But, you know, I'm never expecting it to last. I'm always considering like, okay, what if this is the last good year, or what if this is the last good month, you know? Yeah, I don't know. I for me, like, the way I consume and participate in social media has changed a lot. When I first started doing Instagram, I think probably right when it, you know, launched, it was like 8 or 9 years ago, I think the timing was just good for me because there were, you know, there were less tattooers. I had already been tattooing for, you know, like 9 years or so and was somewhat well known. And it coincided with a time in my career that I felt like I was finally starting to put some of my artistry and like some of my voice into my tattooing instead of just being a like a photocopy machine for my clients. So I got a lot of engagement right away, and I had a lot of like followers right away. But you know, I like Gunnar, I have a pretty good amount of followers, but like I sometimes will get, you know, like 300 likes on something, and other times it'll be 1200, and I just cannot care anymore. You know, I'm luckily in a place where that I haven't felt it in my pocketbook yet. You know, like I'm still out there shaking hands, holding babies, handing out business cards, you know. Also living in a big city and having tattooed here for the past 12 years, I think, you know, is another thing that's really, really beneficial because there's so much word of mouth and people are willing to travel here, you know. Is it going to be like this for me in 10 years? I don't know. Is it going to drop out in 5 years, 15 years? Will it? And then will I be able to come back? I have no idea. It's terrifying. It like keeps me up at night. But my relationship to that has, for my own mental health, had to really change. Like, I have alerts set for the people that I work with. I get a notification when they post something because I want to know, like, what they're up to. I want to be supportive. And other than that, I don't really look at Instagram that much. I want to see what my friends are doing. Like, I want to be inspired. I want to learn, but I just often feel like it leaves me just feeling kind of empty and sad, you know?
Like the mindless scrolling that I think we're all susceptible to after a certain point. If it's just like every time you have an idle moment, you're scrolling through, you're not really taking in any of the stuff that you're seeing anyway.
Yeah. And I don't do that anymore. You know, yeah. Like very occasionally, if I post something, I'll try to like, okay, I'll do a post and I'll look through, you know, and I want to like my friend's things. I want to comment and, for me, it's not a consistent thing, though. I truly only do it when I feel like it, and I try not to make that a moralistic thing. I try to not, like, judge myself for not wanting to post a photo for 2 weeks sometimes, you know? And I'm also grateful that I'm in a position where I can do that and still have appointments, you know? That may change.
I feel like after a certain point, you've got such a large portfolio that it can't be everything so hinged on just new stuff all the time. Mm-hmm. Cause obviously that helps you pop up more and you can grow your audience and everything, which is important. But I feel like after a certain point, when you're established in the same place for so long, then you can kind of relax on that a little bit. And I think a thing that's hindered Gunnar is that he has moved around quite a bit. Mm-hmm. And so that constant feel. I mean, it's very humbling to have to start. And no, none of us ever start from zero again, but you're really rebuilding every time you move.
Yeah.
And especially if you're doing a very specific type of work, you know, you kind of narrow down what you're offering.
Yeah, I have a friend who was moving all the time, and just, you know, felt like tattooing was turning its back on them. And like that was kind of my biggest offering. It's like, you need to stay somewhere. People need to know where to find you.
So the idea that someone could be making artwork that's just not relevant anymore, what would you do if you thought that that was a problem that you're experiencing? I mean, is it worth it to just totally refocus? Because if you're doing work that you really love,
yeah,
then to just change, that'd be very difficult.
This might sound kind of trite, but some of the best advice I ever got was just to keep your paddle in the water, you know, and just keep paddling. And that's really helped me at times when my depression has been, you know, almost debilitating, or my anxiety has been really bad. I just try to keep taking steps forward, and not really think so much about, you know, what the outcome's going to be, positive or negative. I don't know. I think I tend to be kind of optimistic. So my natural instinct is to be like, there is an audience for this person. They're having trouble finding it right now. And maybe they don't communicate in the way that the social media currently dictates that we communicate. Not everyone's good at it. I think I got a head start because I joined right when it started, but I wouldn't say that I'm like social media literate at all either. You know, you can't pour from an empty cup. So I think like I've had to take steps back from tattooing at times to gain a different perspective and to just sort of like, you know, fill her back up so I can give some, you know.
Yeah. It's a hard feeling to know that you're looking for something and just truly being able or having a hard time finding it.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause it's one thing to be stagnant and you know that you want something more or something different, but if you're not taking action towards it, then, you know, maybe you can look forward to doing that when you can. But when you're actually actively moving and trying to find the right work situation and it's still not coming together, I can imagine that's it's tough. It's tough to deal with. And
I hope he does. I hope he finds some comfort. And
well, he's a great tattooer and he's a great painter.
And he's been doing it for a long ass time.
Yeah. It's like cliche to say, but it's not, like you're saying, it's really not him. It's not his abilities. It's not that what he does isn't valuable. It's just like playing this business game and the internet game.
Yeah.
And hopefully it all comes together, as I'm sure it will. And I'm sure it has in the past. So it's, but I think it's interesting because to me, he's a tattooer who was like in the upper echelon when I was coming up and in magazines and reading interviews with him and stuff. And to see this now, I think it's interesting because I don't know if I've ever seen anyone as open and honest publicly about that sort of thing as he's been recently.
Yeah.
On the topic of dealing with depression over the years, in your experience, have you had, I mean, what have been some things that have helped you?
The things that have helped me have really, really changed over the years because I think my depression and my awareness of it has changed over the years. You know, as a child and an early teenager, I think I just thought that that's how everyone felt. You know, you don't question it. I'm assuming it would be like being colorblind, you know, why everyone feels this way. Like, and it's shameful. So everyone is hiding it just like I am, you know?
Right.
So God, I mean, I'm going to be 40 next year. So, I would say, you know, my relationship to what helps me deal with the, you know, my mental health, the PTSD, depression and anxiety, you know, it's really evolved. I've seen my mental health issues manifest in like really, really gnarly physical ways that have kept me from tattooing for times, you know. I've seen them manifest in like sometimes really positive ways where I'm like really extra creative. And but I would say, I guess about like seven or eight years ago, my depression was getting to a point where it was not manageable for me. It's called treatment resistant depression. And, you know, after being on different drugs over the years and trying medication, meditation, acupuncture, going to a shaman, I mean, really, like, you know, the essential oils, like, give me your multi-level marketing scheme, like, whatever, I'll do anything. It finally just got to a point where I was like, I'm a danger to myself. I'm gonna do like one last kind of like brave thing.
Well, were you losing hope the more things that you were exploring? Did it get worse because you felt like you were running out of options?
Yeah, I did. And it felt like it was getting worse because I was actually attacking, you know, some of the root of what was causing the depression, which in my case was a lot of trauma from childhood, teenage years. You know, instead of just treating, you know, the blanket, the heavy, like wet blanket of depression, I was actually under there, like trying to like car mechanic, figure it out. So it made it so much worse. So my psychiatrist suggested that I do a study at Yale for people with treatment resistant depression receiving ketamine intravenously. So like a much lower dose than you would do recreationally in an IV over the period of like 45 minutes to an hour. And, you know, you do that for 2 weeks. Maybe the study was like, it happens 10 times in 2 weeks. But I was like, I have to do something now, you know. So she found me this doctor in New York named Dr. Brooks, who saved my life pretty much. I wrote a letter and I was like, if this treatment doesn't work, then like I need to be, you know, in the hospital for a little bit until I can, you know, not be such a danger to myself. And I had resisted doing the study for like several months. My doctor had brought it up to me because I had a horribly traumatic event happen while I was on ketamine as a teenager. So I thought like, oh my God, how fucked up that like one of the turning points of my life that was so horrible, like one of the factors in that could potentially be one of the factors in helping me cure or heal. Like, ugh. So I went, and when it's not for everyone, you know, I'm not like trying to push drugs or ketamine. I'm just saying like this worked for me in conjunction with like seeing my therapist and being able to kind of talk about the shit that came up. But what it does is sort of thinks about depression and PTSD as more of brain damage in a way. So traditional antidepressants, they target serotonin, dopamine, those kind of things. And they, you know, they work a little bit sometimes for some people, and then they don't, and there's weird side effects. So with ketamine, which has been around for a really, really, really long time and has been used in children and animals, it was sort of found by accident to have these antidepressant qualities. And they honestly still don't really know how it works. The theory, and you know, you can read up on this if you want. Don't take my word for it. I'm not really a science guy, but you know, the theory is that the ketamine targets the glutamate, which then causes the neuropathways to refire and light up and reconnect. So if you look at an MRI or a PET scan of someone with severe depression, it's kind of like a depressed city. You know, there's like a few lights on. And then if you look at the scan after maybe three or four sessions, it's like, holy Christmas tree, you know? I'm one of the very fortunate people that it works really, really well for. I don't enjoy the experience personally. Like, I definitely did a lot of drugs in my earlier days, and it's not, I just don't like that feeling anymore. So being there like in an IV and feeling kind of high for an hour, I don't enjoy.
How often do you have to do that?
It depends on, for everyone's so different. Me, I find that I, for best results, for me to like maintain my life, I go once a month. You know, I know some people who, you know, only have to go every 4 or 5 months. I know some people who've gone, you know, a few times just to get them out of that like horrible dark closet. And then they're able to, you know, to kind of reset their brain and move forward. You know, I hope that comes for me. You know, it's one of those things I can't really think about too far into the future, because it'll just stress me out. You know, I just have to be really, really grateful that I have this thing that's helping me now. And I was so ashamed of it. I wouldn't let Steph, my wife, tell any of our friends or like anyone. It felt like such a weird, heavy, like intense, dramatic thing to do. And
like you had to go to such a crazy length to get a result.
Yeah. And it wasn't like there was no media about it at all. Like there were very, very few articles. So it really felt like I was doing this like sketchy, like what the hell am I doing? It's working. But, you know, but now, it's been, I don't know how many years, 7 years, and it's worked so well for me. I still struggle with depression and anxiety, but it's manageable. And, for the most part, I can like stick to my schedule and like show up to work and show up for my relationship and walk my dog and, you know, be a little kinder to myself. You know, I really debated if I was going to share this at all today, because, you know, it is very personal, but also I feel removed enough from it and so positively affected by it that, you know, it's kind of always been my hope that I would get to a point where I would be able to share it with people, you know, to see if maybe it would work for them or something else would, because there's a lot out there now besides just like the, you know, like electroshock therapy and Prozac.
Yeah, I think it's interesting how a number of drugs are being looked at so differently now than they used to. Drugs that were just like the bad illegal drugs that you do at, you know,
MDMA,
all that stuff, that there's all these possible benefits. And maybe we've been ignoring these things all along because we've labeled these drugs as like these terrible life ruining things, which some are, but not, you know, no one's using like heroin to treat depression or something. Not through a doctor anyway.
Yeah. Maybe self-medicating.
Sure. Well, yeah. I mean, that's probably the name of the game, but I think it's so interesting, and I'm not really a drug guy. But I think that it's irresponsible to ignore the possibility of anything.
Mm-hmm.
Why would you? But I would imagine it's a whole balancing act as far as like funding studies and stuff. That's like a whole nother issue that it's hard to find backing for something that's considered an illegal drug. But
yeah, a lot of work is being done though with MDMA studies and mushrooms and microdosing. So even like ayahuasca, you know, there's a lot of forward movement in that direction, which it seems to be happening like more and more rapidly, which is good, especially for our community, you know, not to like put all of tattooers into one box, but, you know, probably for the most part, a lot of us don't have like the traditional health insurance, 401k type of job security that maybe like a more corporate 9-to-5 job has. So, you know, we often have to get creative in ways that for us to take care of ourselves, you know, whether you're a drug person or not, whether you're a yoga person or not, or a talk therapy person, you know.
Yeah, we all kind of have to find our own path.
Mm-hmm.
Whether, you know, people get super into fitness stuff or super into whatever. But I think it's good. It's good that people are putting more time into themselves, it seems. Or maybe I'm just getting older, so people in my life are like getting to the point in their lives where I think that's probably more what it is for me.
I think the next thing that's going to really help me is to have like a really long coat with a lot of pockets in it that I just fill with small chihuahuas.
That's a pretty controversial treatment.
Yeah, but I'm ready. I feel like...
I mean, I don't know if we're ready to talk about that on the podcast.
Maybe next season.
We need to give the world a little time to catch up on their feelings about like recreational chihuahua use.
Yeah.
But
hey, I'm not trying to push recreational chihuahua use. I know it's not for everyone, but it really has helped me.
I mean, now that I'm not going to lie, I'm feeling a little uncomfortable talking about chihuahuas because it's not really public. It's not a public thing, but...
Sorry to make you uncomfortable, Andrew.
In all honesty, I think that's a great idea. And I could see you hopefully one day attaining that jacket, filling it with chihuahuas.
I just need it.
Yeah. The pockets should be mesh. So if they're like burrowed in, then they've got full ventilation. They're not getting overheated.
Yes.
All these things. Maybe there could even be like those backpacks that runners wear.
I'm thinking Camelback.
Yeah, yeah. And you'll have multiple tubes.
Each one is,
That would be awesome.
Yes. And I think maybe like a little mini Kong toy in each pocket that has like treat dispensing capabilities. They're going to be cared for. These aren't...
I like that.
Yeah. These aren't peripheral treatment things. This is like...
This is a highly developed idea.
Yeah.
And to me, it sounds like this could be your retirement. If you really put some time into developing this, you could really make a million off of this one.
Oh man, I need some help with that. So.
One last huge thank you to our sponsors this week, Alliance Tattoo Supply and the Brian Kelly Army Tattoo Flash. And of course, to our guests, Virginia Elwood and Gunner. Everybody's links and info will be in the show notes, so please check them all out. I'm Andrew Stortz. You can follow me on Instagram at Andrew Stortz, Stortz. Also, this week's extended episode, which comes out on Wednesday, will be more with my conversation from Gunner. So if you didn't get enough of that on here, there'll be more for you. If you want to keep up with the show, check out the website at booksclosepodcast.com. And if you really like the show, leave a rating on Apple Podcasts, or even more importantly, tell a friend, share it online, take a screenshot, share some clips. We're starting to roll out some shorter clips from the show to highlight certain moments of various episodes. That's all on YouTube. And that is all I've got for you for this episode of Books Closed. So thank you again for listening, and I will see you next time.